You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. This business talk show airs live on Tuesday and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, thank you. And we would encourage you to consider listening live during our broadcast times heard here exclusively on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better business decisions. If you'd like to join in on the conversation today, because you are listening live, then find the community chat room section of octalkradio.net's website, log in, post your thoughts and ideas. Our producer, Paul, will be checking them and bringing them to our attention, and possibly I can work them into our conversation with our featured guest today. And that guest is Mr. Ed Hart, who is director of the Family Business Council for Cal State Fullerton's Mihailo College of Business and Economics. Ed, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thanks, Rick. It's good to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about what we're doing here at Cal State Fullerton.
I look forward to having you on the program today. And why don't we start, Ed, by simply asking you if you could tell our audience a little bit about your professional background that predates coming on as the director of the Family Business Council.
All right, no problem. Yeah, prior to coming here, I started here on July 1st here at Cal State Fullerton at the Family Business Council. And prior to working here, I worked for 3 years at USC up in L.A. at the Marshall School of Business, where I was the director of business development, working primarily in executive education, promoting and developing certificate programs for working professionals and companies that were looking to just broaden their horizons and broaden their experience in areas like strategy and finance and leadership and family business and things of that nature. And before working at USC, I actually worked here in Orange County for a minor league baseball team. I was the general manager of the Orange County Flyers, an independent minor league baseball team that, ironically enough, played our home games here on the campus at Cal State Fullerton. So I've got quite a bit of experience here in Fullerton, born and raised here. Wife and I are both native from Fullerton and Orange County. I live here most of our lives, and I've worked in other areas as well within the community. I worked for a family-owned business out of Australia. Worked here, but the business was located in Australia. I worked in the stadium and arena business for quite a while before USC and before minor league baseball. So I could bore you with all of it, but that's kind of the last 10 years or so.
Well, I've got to take you back to at least the part, no disrespect intended to your time at USC, but
no problem.
Tell us a little bit more about, one, how did you get the job with the Flyers, and what does it mean to be the general manager for a minor league baseball team?
You know, how I got the job is still a mystery to me, to be honest with you. I was working at the time selling point-of-sale systems, cash registers, and back-office software for stadiums and arenas. And there was a group out of the Midwest who owned several minor league ballparks, and so they were a client of mine. So I had installed point of sale software and hardware at their stadiums, and they were then being brought in as a consultant to the league that had the team here in Fullerton. And so they contacted me originally to just come in and do a bid and a proposal for them on point of sale systems, and I got to know the owners of the league and the commissioner and so forth. And when the opening for a position here in Fullerton opened up, they contacted me and did the old wink, wink, nudge, nudge, do you know anybody that might be interested, when, you know, I found out later in time that they were actually asking me directly if I was interested. So I had never run a baseball team. I'd been a baseball season ticket holder. I had had a small consulting firm 10 years ago or 12 years ago that worked a little bit with some minor league baseball teams, but they were really looking for someone that had strong business connections here in Orange County, primarily in Fullerton, and that I did have. So I think it was my network and the business relationships that I had here in Fullerton that really won me the job. And what, to your second question, what it really entailed was in regular minor league baseball, which is, you know, teams that are affiliated with the Angels and Dodgers and Padres and so forth, the general manager at that level is primarily in charge of sales and operations for the team. an independent baseball, which is what I was, which means we were independent of the major leagues. We didn't affiliate with any particular major league team, but we affiliated really with all of them. If I had a player that any team wanted, it would basically, the player would be open to bidding from the teams, which was kind of nice. But since we were independent, I also had responsibilities for player personnel and finding the right players, scouting players, working with our manager, our field manager, to try to put the best team on the field and to put more fans in the stadium and sell more hot dogs and more sponsorships and virtually anything and everything I had to do. I had a great staff all 3 years there, but overall I was responsible for virtually anything, you know, from selling tickets to putting the best product on the field. So it was a lot of fun. For a baseball fan and nut like myself, it was great, but it was a lot of hard work and a lot of long hours.
That is so cool. I'm a baseball fan myself.
Everyone should get a chance to do it once, Rick.
I didn't know you had that experience in your background, but it sounds like what a great opportunity to kind of live a dream and to kind of see what working inside of a baseball organization is like.
Absolutely, without a doubt. It was a lot of fun. Like I mentioned, it was fun. It was a lot of hours, but I'd lay in bed in the morning and start laughing, and my wife would say, "What are you laughing at?" Say, "I'm getting ready to go to the ballpark, and they're paying me for it." So
really?
That was pretty cool. But, you know, one of those things that did it for three seasons, but it was time to go get, as she puts it, go get a big boy job, which is what I've got now. So
okay. Well, you know, we've had Dennis Kuhl, who's chairman of Angels Baseball here on Critical Mass, twice. And we've talked with him about the business of baseball, you know, the operating a business underneath what is an entertainment product. And right. It was interesting because, as you probably know, his background was not, although he's an avid baseball fan, you know, this is his first stint in professional sports in a senior capacity. And so it was very interesting to hear from him his insights of being predominantly a business person who then is also now a baseball person, sort of the requirements to run a successful business that is really the national pastime.
You know, it was interesting, too, because I found myself, in the 3 years that I was running the Flyers here in Fullerton, I found myself going to Angel games or Dodger games, and I couldn't be a fan. I had to look at it from the perspective of the business. I had to look at how the concessions was working, and I had to look at how they did their operation and had to look at ways that they did things so that we could try to emulate that and bring it back to our level. And in some areas we were successful with that, and others it didn't make sense to do it at all. I mean, we didn't have parking issues like they have at Angel Stadium, so we didn't really bother looking at that. But what I've enjoyed about not being involved in the business of baseball has been being able to get back to just being a fan. I can go to a game now and actually watch the game and enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, thank you for letting us get a little deeper there with your time
with
the Flyers. I found it curious and unique and wanted to share your experience with our audience.
Well, anytime. I appreciate that.
Okay. Let's change our focus a little bit, Ed, and have you share with our audience a bit more about the council, how you see it, and sort of the role that it plays inside of Mihailo College of Business and Economics.
Sure. Well, to give a little bit of background, the Family Business Council here at Cal State Fullerton was founded in the mid-90s. Dave and Judy Harmon were the ones who originally founded this back then, and then in 1999, my predecessor, Mike Trueblood, who had been on the faculty here at Cal State Fullerton and previous to that also at USC, there's quite a USC connection here as well, Mike has been running the Family Business Council since 1999. And recently has retired, although he's staying on board with us as a consultant and kind of as an ambassador, helping me figure out what I'm doing, meeting the members and putting together workshops and so forth. How the Family Business Council falls under the umbrella of the Mihailo College of Business and Economics is I've heard a lot of different numbers, so I hope nobody's quoting me on these numbers, but I've heard anywhere from 50 to 125 universities throughout North America and actually throughout the world who have family business councils or family business forums or alliances. They call it a lot of different things, but basically they all do the same thing. And we work in conjunction with the university here in Fullerton by working primarily, as I mentioned, with family-owned businesses. These are companies that are either owned or operated or both by families. And as we've heard before, there are probably anywhere from 80 to 90% of the businesses that are run in North America that are run by families or were at one point. For example, Ford Motor Corporation and Walmart. Walmart's the largest family-owned business in the world. A lot of people don't realize that they're family-owned, but they are. If you look at most of the places where you shop or eat or do business, more than likely it's a family-owned business. And a lot of family businesses share common backgrounds, common pains, common frustrations, and some of those frustrations are, for example, a mother and father may run the company and they don't have a daughter or son that is a real heir apparent to run the company when they decide to retire. So they have issues of, okay, what about succession? Who are we going to pass the company on to when we're ready to retire and ride off into the sunset? Others have issues of, maybe we have two people in our family who are qualified. How do we choose? Maybe we have a non-family member who's running the company right now, and how do we ensure that they have the same vision for running the company that we have? So there's a lot of different issues that family businesses share. So where we come in is we work with these businesses to help them identify not only what their, you know, work with them once they've identified what their pains are and what their future issues might be, but then also work with them to help them solve those issues. And we see ourselves really as the premier resource for these family businesses as they figure out what's next for their company. And moving their company from this generation to the next is one of our big focuses. Whether they're a first-generation business or a fifth generation, there's still the issue of how do we get it to the next generation without losing our momentum. So we work with the university. We have a lot of resources here within the university with our faculty, with professors who do a lot of outside consulting as well. Many of their clients are family businesses, so they have expertise in that industry. And we really provide a resource, I believe, for these family-owned businesses that they wouldn't maybe get elsewhere. How's that for a long answer to your short question?
Well, I think it actually opens the door for some follow-up questions.
Okay.
And with your permission, Ed, we're going to follow up on some of those. But first, I needed to stop and take a sponsorship break. And when we come back, we'll talk to Ed Hart about how they help companies with multi-generation or generational transfer of the business. We've also got a slate of other questions that I want to get to with Ed. So full show scheduled today here on Critical Mass, the radio show. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy 3 with triple points on airfare. Buy 2 with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Ed Hart, director of the Family Business Council, is our guest today. Ed, before the break, I said that I wanted to maybe circle back on a part of what you'd answered relative to the Family Business Council's place in the marketplace and the university as well. You had mentioned transitioning between generations, and previously here on Critical Mass, the radio show, we've had experts who help companies in that transition. I don't have the exact statistics in front of me, but I was surprised to learn from those conversations the risk, really, that a well-run family business can be put to by the fact that we're moving from one generation of leadership to the next generation. Could you share with us from your experience and sort of from the Family Business Council's experience working with your members, are there a couple key areas that the family business should keep in mind to kind of help with the success of that transition? Or a general sense, if you could talk to us a little bit about, you know, what experience your members have had in making that transition a success for the business?
Absolutely. Two things right away come to mind for me, Rick. There's probably a lot more, and these are the first two that come to mind for me. The first is to start early. to really, and I don't mean start when your child is 3 years old, but in some cases, yeah, maybe that is what you do. The companies that are successful in transitioning leadership are successful because they've been thinking about it for a while. Give you an example. When my dad, who was an executive at Beckman Instruments in Fullerton and spent 39 years there, he said in the last 10 years of his career, 20% of his time was developing and finding his successor or finding and developing his successor. I think in a family business, it's probably roughly that, maybe longer and maybe more percentage of a time. But I think that if you start thinking about who the next leader is going to be when you're a couple years away from retirement, it's not that it's too late, but it's too late, if you know what I mean. So I think number one advice that we give all of our members is to start that plan early. And if you don't have a good plan early, if you don't have someone who's a logical heir apparent, as I mentioned before, then there's other things you need to look at. Do we want to exit the business? Do we want to develop an exit strategy, sell the company? Do we want to bring in a non-family member executive who hopefully will have the vision that we have? So that's one area, is to just start early. I can't emphasize that enough. The other is to look at others who have done it. And one of the services that I think we provide at the Family Business Council here at Cal State is that we provide a forum for our members to work with each other. We have companies that have been around for 90 or 100 years and others who have been around for 9 years or less. And the companies, obviously, that have been here for a long time are into their third, fourth, or fifth generation of leadership, and they've had success. The companies that are looking at doing it for the first time need to look at those. It's like anything. If you can pattern yourself after people who have done what you're doing successfully, you're going to be more successful. So, again, really the two top things would be start early, plan early as you possibly can. You know, if you don't have an obvious succession plan, what's your strategy for getting to the next level, or what's your exit strategy for getting out of the business? And then, you know, look at others who have done it and done it well. And oftentimes it's hard to find that company that's done it well. But the good news is that at the Family Business Council, we actually know a lot of companies that have. So many of our members come to us and say, look, I just don't know who my next generation leader is going to be. And we can come back and say, well, in your industry, at your company size, here's 5 or 6 names of people on our council who have done it well. Why don't we get together? And that's really helped. So how's that? Does that answer your question?
I'm a big believer in collaborative thinking for top executives, founders, presidents, CEOs, whatever the title may be, but the leaders of companies, because it's hard by virtue of their position within the company for them to really get to a collaborative thinking model with many of their employees because of the fact that they're the boss.
Right.
And in a family business, that's not different. Many times they're the dad or the mother, and so they still have this imbalanced kind of relationship.
Sometimes that makes it even tougher, because then you got to go home and have dinner with them, or you got to have Thanksgiving dinner with the family. And
exactly.
We also have affinity groups. So I'm staring at my wall right now, and this triggers the thought. One of the things that we love to do, too, with our members, we have about 4 or 5 different what we call affinity groups. So we have our core membership, which is about 50 or so companies right now. Of those, we break them down, and we have a next-generation affinity group. It's a group of 7 or 8 individuals, male and female, who are the next person in line to take over the company. And they can speak with each other about issues of how do I work with my dad, or how do I run the company and still have dad involved, or how do I run the company and not have dad involved or mom involved down the road. They can share common interests, common concerns. We also have groups for women leaders of companies. You know, obviously they face different challenges that you and I probably will never see in our lives, and vice versa, obviously. We have CEO groups of people who are CEOs, and, you know, sometimes they're first generation, sometimes they're fifth generation, but they're dealing with a lot of the same challenges like you and I have been talking about, the succession plan and so forth. So as you mentioned, the collaboration of people who, there's a lot less risk if you get 5 CEOs from 5 different companies talking about issues that they face. They're not going to offend anyone. You know, the son or daughter or niece or nephew's not in the room. We don't take notes in these meetings. We don't have agendas. We don't talk about them really outside of the meeting in a public forum. You know, one-on-one on phone calls we certainly do if needed, but it's just a way for them to collaborate with each other and, hey, here's what I'm facing right now. What did you do that worked?
And I think that's a very powerful concept and model. Let me point you in a different direction now, if I could, Ed. Kind of reflect back on you. Of all the different experiences and lessons that you've learned over your professional career, Have you developed a guiding principle that you're now applying to the Family Business Council? And if so, would you share that guiding principle with our audience?
Absolutely. I think that something that I had an opportunity when I was working for the baseball team a couple years ago. For whatever reason, it wasn't because I was Ed Hart. It was because of my job title. I was invited to speak to various groups. And over the three seasons, I probably spoke well over 100 times to elementary schools, rotaries, chambers of commerce, American Legions, high schools, colleges, et cetera, et cetera. And rather than, you know, because I was getting so many requests because, again, of the job title, not because of me, I want to make sure that that's up front, rather than trying to constantly prepare a different talk or a different message, I just finally thought, okay, you know what, I get to just have the same message because I'm speaking to a different group every time. And ultimately what I came up with, and this has really become kind of a guiding principle for me, is the importance of developing relationships of trust. Stephen Covey has a book, The Speed of Trust, which is an outstanding, powerful book about how companies and corporations and individuals really can only succeed in relationships, can only succeed if there's trust. And so that's what we are trying to develop. And I think that my predecessors here at Cal State at the Family Business Council have done a great job of developing. I've been amazed at the relationships that I've seen on this council just in the couple of months that I've been here. I've met with 30 or so of our members. I've sat in some of our group meetings. And the level of trust that these people have with each other is just fantastic. And so it's great that something that's been so important to me prior to coming here seems to really be the guiding principle of the Family Business Council as well, and that is to develop relationships of trust. And that takes time. I mean, a lot of people don't trust people right away. You know, they have to earn our trust. Others of us trust too easily. So it's really kind of, how do we develop that? So in answer to that question, it's probably the fact that all the success that I've had in my career and any success that I will have is based on relationships that I have. I'm a big believer in not burning any bridges. You know, you never know when that relationship from 20 years ago might be the relationship that's going to take you to the next level in your personal or professional life.
Yeah, that's a lesson that is best learned with time, too. You know, sometimes maybe earlier in people's careers, they only see themselves on the ascension, and maybe that realization that, you know, those relationships may be valuable in the future, my sense sometimes gets lost. But as you stay in business longer and you realize the true value of being in a community, you realize how important that relationship and trust can be to your long-term career.
Well, you know, Rick, I had a defining moment in my career about 15 years ago where I learned the importance of people over business. And putting people first, and you know, recognizing that businesses are people. But really, the defining moment for me, if I can share this brief story with you, is that okay?
Please do.
About 15 years ago, I was working for First American Title down in Santa Ana, and at that time in my life, I was a little bit more technically oriented than I am now. I barely know how to turn on a computer now, but back then, for some reason, I was put in charge of managing a help desk for the software division of First American Title, and I had about 15 employees. And one day, and I won't name names or get into too much detail, but I was giving a review to one of my employees, a stellar female worker who I had working for me, and I was actually going to promote her to a senior level position, give her a raise. And the review was going very, very well. And it was a very high energy, high volume call center. I mean, we were getting hundreds of calls every day from offices all over the country within First American Title. So we were on the phones all day long from morning until night. And so you couldn't really just stop production if anything happened. You had to keep going. I'm just telling you that to set the premise for where the story is going. So I was giving this woman her review. As I mentioned, it was going really, really well, and we were probably just about done. I think I'd already had her sign the review, and here's going to be your raise, and here's going to be your new title, and here's your new responsibilities. When I got a knock on my window of my office, I could see the person outside the office, and she couldn't. And the person knocking on my office window was just bawling. And so I stepped out for a minute and found, you know, said, yeah, what's going on? And the woman who was bawling shut the door. So I was outside my office on the other side of the closed door. And she informed me that the son of the woman I was just reviewing had just passed away. He had taken his own life as a teenager. And so I had to shift gears. And I, to this day, I don't know how I did this. I had to shift gears from, you know, this wonderful, jovial conversation with this woman with hundreds of phone calls being answered out on the production floor and the help desk, to come back into my office and share this tragic, you know, the most tragic news you could possibly imagine with this woman, and still manage the help desk. And none of this story is about me, by the way. It's what I learned. It's not what I did. What I learned was the importance of putting people first. And when you put people first, how everything else just kind of falls into place. I mean, because I had developed a good relationship with my staff, I was able to go back out and say, look, we're dealing with this issue right now, but I need you all to just work. I know it's hard to do, but it's going to be the best thing for you to keep your mind off of what's happening. We'll have plenty of time at the end of the day to sit around and talk and so forth. But I don't remember. I can't go through the day exactly how it happened because I was really kind of in shock through the whole day.
Sure, yeah.
This experience taught me how important it is to put people first all the time. And, you know, I could have just shut down the center and told our customers, look, we can't work today. We've had a tragedy in our department. And, you know, maybe in hindsight, I probably should have done something to that effect. But at the end of the day, business continued on. We satisfied our customers, but we also had, she felt like we did everything that we could as a company and as a department to comfort her. And she came back months later after, you know, I don't think she's ever going to finish the mourning process there. But, I mean, when she finally came back to work a few months later and commented about how it's amazing how everyone there just, she felt like everyone there had rallied around her and was there for her in that moment. Yet I know as the manager of that department that work continued to happen. So somehow when you put people first, business still happens to take place. And I think if there's a message I've tried to convey to our members in my first 2 months is that we will put you and your family first. We know that you're a family business. You're not a business family.
Right. That's a powerful story, and I appreciate the fact you were willing to share that here today on Critical Mass, the radio show, with our audience. So thank you for that.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a sponsorship break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Ed Hart this question. Mm-hmm. You're now taking over the Family Business Council, and as you said, you're leading it into its third generation. I'm going to ask him to share his vision for the council moving forward. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Ed Hart, director of the Family Business Council, will talk about that and other topics on the other side of this break. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy 3 with triple points on airfare. Buy 2 with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. All right, Ed, before the break, I said I was going to ask you to give us a focus on your vision for the council moving forward. Would you share that with our audience, please?
Thanks for giving me 30 seconds to prepare for that. No, actually, I appreciate the advanced information on that. Sure, absolutely, Rick. The without reading our vision statement and kind of just quoting it that way, all of us here, I think, from our professor, Tom Schwarz, who teaches in our Family Business Dynamics class, to our dean, to our retiring director, to everybody on our team here and at the university, we all kind of see it the same way. And I think that is that we see that we really are a resource to family businesses throughout Orange County and Southern California. We do workshops on a monthly basis, and the vision of these workshops is to give people tools that they can learn today that they can take back into their work and their family tomorrow. We don't just teach how to run your business and how to plan for succession and how to plan for, you know, wealth management, but we believe that we're also teaching techniques and teaching skills that people can use in their relationships with their family, whether the family members are members of the company or not. Oftentimes, the biggest challenges that a family business will face is how to work with family members who are not part of the business, because there's certainly a sense of entitlement there. There's a sense of, well, I'm a family member. Yeah, I'm not involved in the day-to-day. And I'm speaking from experience from a family business where I worked several years ago. There were members of the family who felt that they had every right to the assets and the capital of the company as those who were putting in 60-hour work weeks. So we're giving people tools that they can use back in the workplace. We really, truly do envision ourselves not only as the premier resource for family businesses here in Orange County and Southern California, but I have the vision that someday in the near future we'll be looked at as one of the premier family business councils in the country. We learn and we work with family business. I have there's a family business alliance, Directors Alliance, that I belong to, which is my counterparts at these other universities around North America. And we share ideas, we share speakers, we share resources. Some of these family businesses stretch across regions of the country, and so some of them are businesses and partners with us here and in other areas as well. And so we just really see ourselves as not only a resource here in Orange County, but across the country. We may have ideas and things here in Fullerton that could be used in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, for example.
And they probably are being used because so much, I say 80% of business challenges are common within different businesses and different industries. It's just that unless you're in an environment like a family business council setting, most business leaders are so consumed running their business and kind of growing it, maintaining it, and taking so much of their energy that if they don't make the time to be outside the business, like at a family business council, they may miss the fact that a lot of what they're facing, they can either learn from other people or they can teach and share with other members of the council, not just here in, you know, Southern California, but in other parts of the country as well.
Sure, yeah. A company like Holiday Inn and 7-Up, you know, bottling company, pretty different industries, but they can, and I apologize, I'm using those examples because I'm looking at the freeway right now at a Holiday Inn and a 7-Up truck just drove by. So that are very different in what they do could actually have very similar strategies for how to enhance customer satisfaction or enhance distribution, customer care, or whatever the case may be. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the nice things about being in an alliance like our members are, where we have, you know, construction companies and restaurants and hotels and distribution firms and other types of companies from various industries. They share ideas with each other that, you know, you and I come from a different background, but I may learn something that's going to change my life from you today, even though we've never even literally met, because it's so common. The challenges that we face as human beings and as businesses are so common.
Yes. Speaking of challenges, let's ask you then, Ed Hart, if you would be so kind as to talk with our audience about a current challenge facing the Family Business Council. You know, if you could explain a little bit about the challenge, but also share with us ideas that you have or you have begun to implement that would mitigate that challenge,
okay.
I would appreciate it.
Well, we don't stand alone in the challenge of trying to grow our business, certainly. We've all been affected since 2007 or 2008 with, you know, this wonderful economic recession that we find ourselves in the midst of right now. And we're no different. I mean, certainly one of the things that we'd certainly like to be bigger right now than we are. We do envision that we will be. But you know, realistically, you know, like I said, we have about 45 to 50 members currently on our roster. I would like to see us add 6 or 7 additional members and maybe a couple more sponsors before the end of this fiscal year, which ends June 30th. And so one of the challenges that I face is certainly remaining profitable as a business entity here at Cal State Fullerton. But even bigger than that, the biggest challenge we face is how can we – there are – by some counts, maybe 5,000 family-owned businesses in that $10 to $100 million range in Orange County, which is kind of our sweet spot, although we do work with some smaller and some larger companies. That's really our sweet spot. So if there are 5,000 of them out there and we have 45 on our roll right now, we certainly have an opportunity for growth. So I'd say the biggest challenge that I'm facing coming in is certainly how do we grow this, but not grow it so fast that we lose touch of the relationships, as I talked about before, that we have with our current members. But what are ways that we can not only grow our numbers, but how can we grow the value of what we're giving to our members? Certainly we have workshops, as I mentioned before, that we do every month. And so one of the things I'm looking at is let's find ways to make our workshops better. They've been great, but you can always get better. How do we keep them fresh so we're not doing the same workshops over and over, which is some of the feedback I've heard around the country from other members of other alliances as well, as they're facing the same challenge. You know, how do we make sure that the workshops are fresh and new and that the members will continue to learn from these things? One of the things that we're looking at, so growth and making the council more valuable to our members are two of the biggest challenges that I face and we face as a council. One of the things that we're talking about doing is, as I mentioned, our sweet spot is that $10 million to $100 million company, but there are thousands and thousands of additional companies out there that could utilize our resources that are much smaller. There's a lot of, you know, I hate to use the term mom and pops, but it illustrates the point. There's a lot of small companies out there that may be in the $1 million to $5 million annual revenue range that could utilize the same information and resources that we provide but don't have access to our membership right now because that's not really who we've gone after in the past. So we're talking about possibly reaching into that smaller market and maybe doing something a little bit different, maybe utilizing our members who have been there and done that, so to speak, and been successful as mentors. You know, we have one company in Orange that is a $400 million company that started 35 years ago. They can teach a $2 million company how to get to that level because they've done it. And so I'm hoping, and I'm crossing my fingers as I say this, but I'm hoping that one of the things that we can implement here in the next 12 months or so is working with some of these smaller companies by utilizing our existing members as mentors and teachers and facilitators to teach them, you know, hey, here's what we did, and not saying that this is going to necessarily work for you because it was a different economy and different industry, but like we talked about before, Rick, here are some of the things that we've done. Maybe this will work for you as well. So one strategy is to utilize our members more as mentors, not only for each other already, like we kind of do, but to work with some of these smaller companies. And I think that will, in the long run, maybe in the next 12 to 18 months, that'll grow us a little bit, but also it'll grow our bigger council over the years as these smaller companies become bigger. It's kind of like, you know, how the Angels will have Little League Night, not because Little Leaguers are buying baseball tickets, but because Little Leaguers will grow up to buy baseball tickets.
You have to have a long-term view, and I think that's probably an advantage or an opportunity with your Family Business Council being tied to the Mihailo College because of all the strategic work being done around the college itself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's like, and case in point, we have a full-time faculty member, I mentioned his name earlier, Tom Schwarz, who sits in the suite here with me, and he has a tremendous amount of background in family business, both personally and professionally. He's taught at university levels prior to even coming here to Cal State Fullerton, and he is a key cog in our wheel, if you will, of making this work, because he not only has the research and the background in his life, but he also is just he's already proven to be and will continue to prove to be a great resource to our family businesses that we bring into the council. So there are some companies and organizations and consulting firms that consult with family-owned businesses, and I think they do a wonderful job, and I hope that they stay out there, and I hope that they continue to be successful. And where we can augment that is we have this background, like you mentioned, the Mihailo College. It's a strength. Cal State Fullerton's been around for 50 years. We do a tremendous amount of research. We have great resources available to us, not just here at Mihailo, but throughout the university. I had a meeting this morning with one of the different schools here on campus, and they're excited to get on board and work with us as well, and they're more in the communications and public policy type of things, so political science. So there's a lot that we can do for these members that maybe others might not be able to do if they don't have that educational component.
I wonder if you could, or if you would, think back to a time, maybe a past experience where you learned a valuable business lesson and it came through a difficult or trying experience.
All right. Well, you might laugh when I tell you this because it doesn't sound trying or difficult when I start going back to my baseball experience, but I learned a lot in 3 years of running a minor league baseball team. One of my favorite movies, Rick, is, you wouldn't be surprised to hear me say this, and you might even be able to guess based on my baseball background, but Field of Dreams is probably my all-time go-to favorite movie. And the famous line from that movie is, if you build it, they will come. So using that mentality, I thought, okay, I'm a baseball fan. I love the game. Fullerton is a great baseball community. Cal State Fullerton has won national championships. We're 5 minutes away from Angel Stadium, who another team that has had a lot of success. We're 30 miles away from Dodger Stadium, another team that's had great success. There's 3 million people in Orange County. If we put a minor league baseball team in Fullerton, if we build it, people will come. I just had that naive attitude that, hey, we're minor league baseball. We're $5 a ticket. We're $2 for a hot dog. We're $3 for a soda and so forth. Parking is free or maybe $5. So I just thought if we put the team here, it wasn't my decision to put the team here, but when I came here, I thought, well, this is great. They're just going to show up in droves. And opening night, our first year, we did. We filled the stadium. We had a great crowd. The next night, we had about 300 people. A month later, we had a travel team that was here from Japan that came to play us. And we marketed it a little bit into the Japanese community. We met with the Japanese Chamber of Commerce in L.A. There was an article in the L.A. Times about this team from Japan coming over to play us. And so I just assumed that with just a couple of media hits and a couple of things here and there, we'd fill the stadium. Well, the L.A. Times came out to do a piece on this Japanese team on this particular day. And I had not followed up with any of my groups that were supposed to come out. I hadn't followed up with any of my staff who were arranging to bring people in. We had the LA Times come out, and we had a local television station come out to do a feature on this team. We had 152 fans in the stadium. And so this was a very painful experience for me, where I learned the if you build it, they will come theory doesn't really work in business. You can't just assume that because you think you have a great idea that everyone around you is going to think it's great as well. You have to find out from people if they think it's a great idea first before you decide to build something. We'll never create a workshop here at Cal State Fullerton at the Family Business Council because we think it's a good one. We'll develop it because our members have told us, hey, this is what we need. We need more education on this. We did that at USC in executive education, where I came from before here. We wouldn't build a class thinking, well, everybody needs a 3-day class on strategy. No, we would go out and talk to people first and find out what they need and then build it around that. So I think the lesson I learned from that baseball experience was, just because I think it's a great idea and just because my staff thinks it's a great idea doesn't necessarily mean it's a great idea. And if we build workshops and we think it's awesome, that doesn't necessarily mean it will be. So we're doing a lot of research. That's why we have professors, and that's why we do the research that we do and do surveys and go out and talk to family businesses and say, what hurts in your business? What can we do to help you, you know, alleviate some of that pain? Because ultimately, everybody buys something because they're trying to satisfy a need or trying to get rid of a pain. And so if we find out what those pains are and then build it from there, I think we'll be more successful. So that was the one painful experience. There's probably many. Your show's not long enough for me to tell you all of them, but that's the one that came to mind originally.
And I appreciate, and I can empathize with what you must have been going through during those low attendance games, because that's, I love asking that question, because invariably when the guest answers it, it ends up being the type of lesson that they're not soon to forget and becomes almost foundational in sort of their approach to business moving forward. So thank you for being candid, Ed.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a great question. I think that's a question that should always be asked. And I think as I go forward and interview to hire people, I may ask that question right out of the gate, because I want people to think. Oh, that's good stuff.
There you go. We're going to take our last break of the show. When we come back, we've got a couple other questions that we're going to fit in the time that we allotted for Ed Hart, who's director of the Family Business Council. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
If you're a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gefella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Ed Hart, director of the Family Business Council, is our guest today. And Ed, I wanted to ask if you would share with our audience today information about the upcoming Family Business Awards Luncheon.
Absolutely. We are We work in conjunction with the Orange County Business Journal. This is the 12th annual Family Business Awards. The Orange County Business Journal does a lot of different awards throughout Orange County. It's primarily for businesses that are based here in Orange County. I've attended their CEO awards, their CFO awards in the past. It's just a fantastic show and luncheon that they do every year, depending on, you know, which industry it is. In this case, as I mentioned, it's the 12th annual Family Business Awards. It's held at the Hyatt Regency in Irvine. It will be on Wednesday, November the 30th. It's a luncheon, so it goes from 11 o'clock till about 2 o'clock. We have two keynote speakers, the Ganahl Lumber, which is one of the largest Orange County-based family businesses, Peter Ganahl, the president and founder of the company, and his son Mark, who's the general manager within the organization, will be speaking to the group on challenges and issues that they've faced as they've grown their business, challenges that they face as a lumber company in this economy, and what they've done to stay strong, and suggestions that they have for others in the room to stay strong. One of the things that we're doing with the Orange County Business Journal is we are working in conjunction with them to nominate companies that we feel are worthy of the Family Business Award. And there are, if I may, I'll tell you the five categories that we look at. We look at small businesses, which are, you know, 1 to 50 employees, medium-sized businesses, which are 51 to 149 employees, and then large companies, which are considered at 150 employees or greater, again, keeping in mind family-owned within Orange County. There's also an award for longevity, which is given every year to a company that has been around a long time and been successful. And then there's an up-and-comer award, companies that are growing and they're seeing a lot of growth and they're growing quickly and they're having some success. So we hope to get 50 or 60 companies nominated overall. The nomination closes on the 21st of October. We're about halfway to that goal right now, and obviously, as I mentioned, there will be five winners overall. Ganahl Lumber, for example, they actually won the award in 2010. They were the Longevity Award winner in 2010, so they can speak from some experience of a successful company. If you're interested, people can contact me or contact the Orange County Business Journal, and at some point in this interview, hopefully, I'll be able to give that information, a website and email address and so forth that they can send to or log into to nominate companies. If you are a family-owned business or you know someone that you do business with who is family-owned and you think that they're, you know, a stellar company, then those are exactly the companies that we want to nominate. As I mentioned, it's the 12th annual. We typically get 300 to 400 people in the room for this. It's very well attended. Your company will get a lot of recognition, even if you're just nominated, let alone if you win, obviously. And also, if you nominate companies, we'll also recognize your business or you as an individual as well. It's a great event. It's well attended. It's promoted heavily throughout Orange County. We promote it to our members. Our members are promoting it to their friends. So just looking to see if we have any other information.
I had a question.
Sure.
For those in the audience that are thinking about, well, maybe my business qualifies, or they're thinking about nominating a company, what's the criteria to be considered a family-owned business?
To be considered a family-owned business?
Yes.
If you are owned or operated by two members of your family or more, then you're considered a family business. If you're a sole proprietorship or you're, you know, corporate run by an individual or by a board or what have you, then you're not necessarily. But a family-owned business is typically if there are two or more members of the family. So it could be a mother, son, father, daughter, brother, brother, cousin, aunt, whatever. If two members of the family run the business, you're considered a family-owned business.
Perfect. I've been to the luncheon several years in a row. I enjoy it. It's a great room of Orange County family business owners and others, and I would highly recommend to anyone that's listening either now or in the future on a podcast, maybe off of Apple iTunes, as long as it's before November 5th, right? Buy a ticket and come to luncheon.
Right, and the actual luncheon itself will be on the 30th of November. We actually will have tickets available at the door if available. We hope that they won't be. We hope to sell it out. They can nominate. You can nominate anyone by a couple of different ways. If I can give the website right now, Rick, does that work?
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, log on to www.ocbj, which is Orange County Business Journal, .com/biz events, EVENTS. So www.ocbj.com. at ocbj.com/biz events. That's how you can register for it if you want to come and just be an attendee. That's also where you can find the nomination form if you want to nominate someone. You can also email me. You can email Jane Kennedy, who works for the Orange County Business Journal. I know you know Jane. She is at kennedy@ocbj.com. And finally, you can reach me at edhart@fullerton.edu, and I'll get you all that information. So those are lots of different ways that you can find out more about it through the wonderful world of technology.
Well, I'm sure we'll have a chance to connect. I know you'll be a busy man on Wednesday, November the 30th, during the VIP reception and then the luncheon, but I look forward to connecting with you then and certainly before that. Ed, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Is there any other information, places people need to go online to learn more about the Family Business Council that I haven't asked you about today that you would like to share with our audience, or have we given out all the URLs?
Well, I hate to URL people to death here, but one last one I'll give you is just simply our website, which is www.csuffamilybusinesscouncil. So it's, if you're wondering again, what was the name of that website again, just think of who we are, csuffamilybusinesscouncil.com. That'll take you right to our website. You'll have all of our contact information. There's information about our upcoming events, how to become a member of the Family Business Council, who some of our sponsoring partners are. And, yeah, again, just last pitch, if you're a family-owned business and you want to learn more about who we are and what we do, we have workshops every month. Our first workshop of the new school year will be on September the 20th. And if you call me or email me and tell me that you heard me on this show, then we'll invite you to come out as our guest to the event at no cost to you. There's dinner and drinks and a great speaker and great networking opportunities. So love to have you.
I appreciate you making that offer, and I appreciate you taking the time to prepare to be our guest, and then obviously the content and information that you've delivered here on Critical Mass, the radio show. And thanks for being a friend of the radio program and kind of welcome to the Critical Mass business community, Ed Hart.
My pleasure, Rick. Thanks so much for the opportunity. I greatly appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Goodbye. Ed Hart, ladies and gentlemen, director of the Family Business Council at the Mihailo College of Business and Economics at Cal State Fullerton. I've enjoyed speaking with him this afternoon. I hope you've enjoyed the show today and found the interview might provide you with some ideas and information to help you, as a business leader, make a better decisions or make better decisions. If you'd like to learn more about our business, Critical Mass for Business, then simply go to www.CriticalMass4Business.com. So this is your host, Rick Franzi, saying until the next show, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, only on OCTalkRadio.net.